Greetings and welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. This is Janice Summers. She's our interviewer. She's from TC Camp. And welcome to Dr. Watong Sun, today's guest in Room 42. Watong Sun is an associate professor of digital media and global user experience design at the University of Washington, Tacoma. She studies how to design and innovate for usable, meaningful, and empowering technology to bridge differences in globalized world. She's the author of two books, Cross-Cultural Technology Design in 2012 and Global Social Media Design in 2020, both from Oxford University Press. She writes for public media, including Fast Company and The Conversation, and she speaks at South by Southwest, STC, UXPA, CHI, and ATTW, and she offers workshops for local SIGs and international conferences. And today, she's here to help us start answering the question, what does social media mean for technical communicators? Welcome.
Thank you. And thanks for bringing me to this conversation. And I appreciate your patience. And I know Lisa reached out to me before, and then I was not able to make it. So thank you. And
We hold in there. It's really interesting what you're doing, and we didn't want to let you go.
Oh, thank you.
So let's talk about global design for social media, and really, and we'll feed in there some thoughts about what it means to technical communicators, right? Because oftentimes social media sits in a different wheelhouse other than technical communication. So let's first talk about the global social media design practice and what that means. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
So the title of Global Social Media Design, if you look at the back of my background, you see that actually puts the book cover there.
Yeah, I love it.
So yeah. if you look at that title, that title part, Global Design, I particularly asked the book design, cover designer to design this way, that I want to convey two messages here. First, this is about global design. Mm-hmm. Second, this is global design of social media. So to put it this way, I'm using a global design approach to look at technology design. My first book is cross-technology design. So I use the cross-cultural design approach to look at how we do technology design. When I say technology design, I'm looking at interactive technologies, and I have a very broad view of technologies that not necessarily just high techs. Remember in one class, I had a conversation with my students, 200 level students. Then one student asked, is SCUF a technology? I said, yes, it's a technology. Something that people made that become a technology.
You know, that's a really good point. Technology is very broad. Right.
And it includes consumer products. Yeah, I think that student would just kind of think about, undergraduate student, 200 level class, they would think about technology, just cell phones, computers,
software applications. Right.
So I want to let them know actually technology is everywhere. So it's a tool that had been produced. Produced in factory, through manufacturing practices.
Right.
And that means that it follows certain standards. It had industry standards. And then it also become a product, a symbol in our cultural circuit. So this is how I see technology. Yeah. So a scarf is obvious a technology. And I think we have feminist historians who started technology practice in the 18th centuries and 19th century. And they found that actually, even just 150 years ago, when they have a technology affairs, you can see products like beads, and beaded products there. So at that time, I think we had a much broader view of technology. Now we seem to narrow high tech, just like, I think yesterday Apple released that new product. That seemed to be the technology we talk about, but no, it's not. Okay, right. So yeah,
It's kind of one of those, you know, a lot of people think, you know, in terms of technology, they just think exclusively to electronic, right? To something like that electronic. But technology is far more inclusive than that. And it's anything that's made and manufactured, minting coins, right? We've minted coins for a long time. That's a technology.
Yeah, of course.
right.
And even quilt making.
Yes.
Quilt making is technology.
Yeah, right.
It
requires more human interaction and making it oftentimes, but yeah, it is a technology.
Right. So yeah, technology, you know, I'm just having this thought now as we're speaking. So think about that. I think that actually women are the first group of technologists. Think about when the society started, you know, in the, you know, I would say million years ago. Think about the first division of labor, mango hunting. Women stay home, do the work, and they begin to make technology.
Right. Well, because you had to make tools and utensils, right? I mean, that's the very beginning. So we've been at technology for a long time.
right. Yeah. I think actually now excluded that when men went out for hunting, they need tool too. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, there's interesting correlation too when you talk about global social media.
Right.
Like you were saying, I mean, earlier with the scarf, and we're talking about tools that are used around the, you know, around the very first societies, they have different meaning in different areas, right? So around the globe, a scarf may look different from one culture into another culture into another culture because they adapt to suit their local customs, right? Their local habits and social norms, right?
Right. And I would think that I use a term called the cultural sustaining approach that, you know, they need to be sustainable in their local culture. So in my first book, I studied how to design meaningful technology. I've said that I was using approach called the cultural sensitive, but then I realized, no, it's not sufficient. Just we look at the cultural sensitivity. And that actually, there's a much bigger conversation going on there that is, you know, it's also that empowering aspect that it's not just a meaningful aspect. It's that you need to feel that this part, you're empowered and then that's you, that's your identity. I think the meaningful can help you address a part of your identity, but it's not enough. So the global design approach in my new book, actually, I would say it look at the interaction of agency and structure. So agency that, oh, so what can enable us do and what empower us do as a designer? And then, but we're still confined in this structure, in this hierarchy, in the global, I would say in the global cultural and the power, in the global power hierarchy. This way. Then it's still a way how to negotiate your agency. And a global approach, I think the difference between a global approach and a cross-cultural design approach is that a global approach emphasizes the interdependence and the interconnectivities between other practices. So when so in the first book, in the cross-cultural technology design, I was more looking at you know, how we can design something that fit the culture, the local cultural ethos. And then in the global social media design book that I'm doing more comparison and also want to see the difference. So I think I have in one chapter of the new book, I studied the global competition of four social messaging apps. That is, these four apps are WhatsApp from United States, KakaoTalk from South Korea, and WeChat from China, and Line from Japan. I'm listing them according to the timeline when uh-huh. they were released. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so I study how cultural consumption and the value proposition shaped the global competition of these four social messaging apps. When I say cultural consumption, that's related to, you know, the cultural meaning I was saying a moment ago, that, you know, think about scarf, and there's so many scarves on the market, mm-hmm. and then how to make your scarf stand out. You need to have certain cultural consumption practice associated with that, and the value proposition. And I think value proposition is a marketing term, a business term. I won't say it's a marketing term. I think this is something that we use when we talk about innovation. Then what unique values a product will bring to the market that make you different. So
you bring up a good point, right? Because there's features and functions and things in technology that need to be communicated out. I'm seeing that thing of, like, you know, if you're communicating about a scarf in one culture, you need to understand how to communicate that and speak to another culture, rather than trying to just accept that how you say to one person matters to everybody, right? Is that kind of where you're going? Yeah. So it's that technology that we communicate out to, and understanding the cultures where we're communicating too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think I would like to say this way, that yes, scarf is an example I'm using with my students, but actually my main research look at interactive technologies. So these are high-tech products, but I think those consumer products, the design practices of consumer products can still help us understand these high-tech products.
Well, yeah, because a scarf is something that's really common, right? So I agree. I like your analogy of a scarf, because it strips everything else away. Right? Yeah. Very good. So you were looking at these different interfaces, right? And what were some of your findings?
I think that, I was actually looking at discursive affordance to see how discursive affordance will help us to succeed in this kind of global competition. The discursive affordance I see here, going back to, you know, what I said, agency, the interaction between agency and the structure here, I see discursive affordance is this kind of two-way shaping force between a technology and a society. And affordance, I like the concept of affordance, that because it shows both the constraining side, that, you know, you are structured, you are one. So we are actually confined in this global power hierarchy.
Right.
And then, but there are also some empowering aspect there. So I call discursive affordance that, to show that that's something that we can actually, if we look at this discursive affordance aspect, that maybe that help us to think about how we can do design better, and then also help us to see how we can position our technology products better in this global competition. So example of discursive affordance, I would like to talk about the Line Friends. I think I have been using Line Friends as an example in multiple occasions. So Line is a social messaging app released in Japan. And it's one of the, I think, according to my research, that it has been the top social network service in Japan. It was released just 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it came much later after Facebook, Twitter, but it beat Zoom. All these social media services. Why? Because I think they were able to create, develop discursive affordances that correlates and that works in Japanese internet culture. So mm-hmm. one of the innovative practice they did that they released cute virtual stickers and emoticons to help Japanese users to convey more sophisticated and subtle feelings. So they have these very cool lines, virtual stickers. And yeah, nowadays we see all these virtual stickers everywhere, but back in 2010,
not as common.
2011. Yeah, right. And so they introduced new ways of communication. And then people started to see that actually we can just use stickers to have conversation. You don't need to talk. You don't need to type words. Just use stickers. And they went beyond of using virtual stickers. And then they turned stickers into the characters of LINE friends. You know, those plush toys,
right,
or these accessories, like stationaries, you know, USB sticker or mouse or cups, and they also turn into cookies and coffee mugs, all these accessories. So, and also become part of the themed interface for that social messaging app. And because of that, so they are able to create both online world and offline world. So nowadays, when you go to Times Square of New York City, you see LINE Friend stores. I guess many people in the United States actually don't use LINE. I haven't heard about LINE. If you don't have Japanese friends or you don't have Southeast Asian friends, you probably haven't heard about LINE, but you probably have seen those LINE character friends. Yeah, so they're very popular. Yeah, so that's a kind of discursive affordance I've been talking about in my book, in my second book. And so this become a very powerful value proposition for them. And of course that followed. And we know that it's hard to, people don't talk about copycats nowadays now because when there's a new practice, people just copy it. So right, we see that.
We see that a lot, and that's true. People don't talk about copycats these days.
And then actually, so we've been so used to these virtual stickers, but you know, but who started? You know, I think that it's kind of interesting to look at when this started. Yeah.
When the iconography started, when people first started. Yeah.
And I think that, and also, LINE was the first company among all these social messaging apps to run a TV ad. So, you know, yeah, because most, I think most technology application, phone application, mobile applications are just marketed on the App Store or Google Play Store. Of course, they don't have such budget to do that either. But I think that LINE was the first company they do TV ads, and also they opened a creators market back in 2014, I think, to let anyone design and submit stickers, because they know that stickers, you know, the stickers made in Japan might not be able to convey subtle feelings in South America, right?
Right, but here's an interesting thing that they adopted was inclusion of the culture, right? And saying, I want to bring you in so that you have a sense of ownership to the communication that we're trying to convey, right? So I think, you know, if there was an interesting way to do that for the tech comm professional to say, how can I include my audience? Like if I'm communicating to a group, how do I include them in creating that communication so that we have something where they feel is integrated with them, right? Which is
what it gives them. And it gives them the agency, right? That's kind of where you were back to, right?
Right.
It's not just here's my stickers, but you can you can create stickers. You can be right. part of this and have agency in it. Yeah, I see what right. you're saying. Yeah, right. it's interesting.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's a really key thing for people to take note of this and see, like, you know, because like it's like you said, you know, technology is everywhere. So we can't say how to translate this directly into your particular technology, but use it as an inspiration and a guide to influence and inform how you yeah. step forward, right?
Right.
So
right.
we can invite you in so that mm-hmm. you can decide how you want to design your experience. No? Or am I getting that
well,
wrong?
Well, applicable to the technology.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, it's part. Yeah, it's part of the user agency that then it. I think the participatory aspect is part of social media.
Yes. Features,
the characteristics. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, right. Right.
Yeah. So how you should open your platform to get more people involved. Right. So as you build a discursive affordance of your product, how you expand your network. This is part of network building. And right. then that also that the concept I use in my book that I call the hybridization, hybridity. Uh-huh. Yeah, how you splice networks and how you develop fan bases. So right. in this case, LINE develop fan bases with their LINE characters. And then, you know, it's possible that you don't use their product messaging apps, but you have been familiar with their products. You have been familiar with that, those cool plush toys, like brown or coin, you know, the rabbit, the bear and the rabbit. And they also also keep their LINE friends evolving. A few years ago, they released a new line of LINE friends collaborated with BTS. So you know the BTS, that's Korean boy.
Yeah.
So
neat.
Please correct me. I don't remember how many because I'm not a BTS fan. I know they have seven people or six people, but anyway, I know for that BTS.
More than six. It's more than six. Yeah.
So yeah. for that particular BTS friends characters, and they have each of the singer design one, they also have an additional one for the whole band.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
cool.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what released in spring 2018.
Right. Okay, cool. So what they did then is they're not just sitting back and resting on their laurels, but they're adapting and transforming.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that social media allows you to do. So for all the tech com people out there, if you can get involved in social media, it allows you to kind of adapt and try new things as well, to speak to your audience in a new way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you need to ride the cultural wave.
Yes, and I think what they did is they tapped into, okay, so the South Korean band, which they're popular all over the globe, but they're expanding their social network because they're including, you know, social influencers in this case, large social influencers.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that might be something to think of too from a technology communicator's perspective is, well, how can I include other technologies or other organizations into our mission?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this has been, I think this kind of splicing network has been a popular practice in the fast fashion industry, then so you see that the brand like Zara might collaborate with a designer or even some other brands. I don't remember the name at this point. Some Japanese brands, so they'll collaborate. Uniqlo, something like that. They will collaborate with famous designers. Yeah.
Right. Well, and in the States, ask anyone who follows basketball.
Yeah, yeah, Nike,
Nike did.
Right? The sneakers,
right? So, and this dovetails into your research into networks and growing networks and fan bases, too.
Yeah.
right? It feeds right in.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm not sure everybody knows about. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that side of the research?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I think that fan research actually started as a cultural escape. So a few years ago, I had to do some projects I would like to do. And then I think as I was doing some projects, I would write something that I began to just, I think I began to waste my time on social media and follow some shaking fans community.
Who hasn't gone down the rabbit hole?
Right. And then I thought, okay. And then I found that I end up wasting a lot of time. That I think I need to make this more productive. I began to turn my observation into my research. Right. That's how I got involved into fan community. And then, so yeah. So then I wrote an article for USPA magazine about, you know, how to, I think the title is kind of like a social game, and I don't remember, but you can see the link. I think it's on my page.
So
that's, I talk about how high-tech products develop fan bases by following, you know, the Korean, K-pop, Korean pop, you know, K-pop. Yep. Fan practices, yeah. And that's how I started fan research, yeah.
It's following K-pop?
And right. Started with K-pop, but also because I've been teaching social media class, this undergraduate 200 level class for 8 years. So one project in my class is to study our online fan community. The fan community is a very interesting phenomenon in social media. Practice that. So you see that the people get connected even though they are physically separated in long distance, but the people develop a very robust online community.
Yes.
And they become a powerful force.
Yes. Yeah. They'll become emotionally invested.
So I think that at first I asked students to start online fan community, and then later I changed that project into fandom research. So we just don't study fan communities, and ask them to study any fandom phenomena happening in social media space. And I think the new phase that how we can apply these kind of fandom, you know, these fan-based strategies to develop engagement for our own, I will say, for community activism. So for example, lately I asked them to do a engagement strategy project. They need to apply the fan-based strategies they learn from this fandom phenomena to help our student organization, our campus, our office, engagement strategy.
Right. A lot of people are interested in how do you measure that? What kind of analytic tools are they using to measure engagement and action and reaction?
This is a very good question. And I think that there are certain technology there, I would say that there's certain software.
Applications, right.
Certain application there. I will highly recommend they go to the HubSpot.
Okay.
That's resource to search for that. In our class, it's a 10-week class. We actually don't have time to measure that. So, I'm afraid I cannot give you an answer right away, but I know they're there and they're large. Yes. And and you can also use R to track these engagement. This is a very popular research area in social computing. It's a big part. Yeah. It also gets a lot of funding. Yeah. I mean, not corporate funds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I was thinking, and I'm just going to go sideways a little bit, because when we talked earlier, one of the things that stuck out was that you were talking about how technical communicators need to employ social media in order to, because not all of us are the ones who stand in front and say, hey, me, right? And so, but you need people to advocate for you. And if they don't know you and they're not part of your network and you're not engaging with people, then you need to, basically. Right.
Yes. I think that I like this question because this actually, this new book project I'm working on now.
Tell us about this.
Here's a preview.
The starting point and the final product might be different, but something that related to that, you know, how you build yourself a fan base. But I look at a particular area. So I'm looking at how to help BIPOC faculty in the I would say BIPOC women faculty and to grow fan base. And the title is grow your lily pad.
So that is the metaphor
I got from my friend, and she helped me see that, you know, it's important to network and with your colleagues and at precarious times, but it's also important to grow your own lily pad.
Yes.
And build your network. And so that way will help us to hop from one lily pad to another pad and then to our dream destination. That's the goal. But then at the same time that we can see lily pad has unique meanings in different layers. So lotus flowers that come from lily pad, you know, related to lily pads, they actually, these are flowers. They don't want to just be adjusted, be a climb to a certain situation. They want to be, they want to be themselves. And I think that this is related to the conversation we're having now about DEI, we call it diversity, inclusion, and initiative. And then I think one thing that talk about belonging. About that. And but I think that if I go, but I don't think this, the lily pad strategy will only work for BIPOC faculty, you know. I think this is something that everyone needs, that because we need allies, right? We talk about building allyship network and how we can use social media technology and the discourse of importance from social media technology and also the network building power, I would say also the hybridization, how can Splice network help you to reach your goals, reach your business goals, reach your career goals, and you have some other goals, you know, for community activism. How to do that.
And I think that there's also a way to grow beyond your local network, right? You talk about faculty, grow beyond it, like what, you know, faculty that you don't know, you know, around the world.
Right.
It's limitless, Right. But I love the analogy of the lily pad.
I think that when we talk about strategy, we can use some strategy that have been used a lot in digital marketing, that I think that something we talked about brand personality, mm-hmm. and shared community values and conversation building. So I'm just using these three terms to talk about that. And so brand personality, think about our technical communicator or think about your business. Mm-hmm. So what's your brand personality? Mm-hmm. And so if you're an individual, what kind of expertise you can bring to your community, your niche audience? Because when we talk about fan base, you are not addressed to general public. You're addressing to a niche audience. Mm-hmm. This niche audience, this fan base will be your champion, right? Will be your allies. And will also be your amplifiers. Right. Yeah. So, and I know maybe you'll say, oh, I don't have fan base yet, but this will be the goal, right? You want to develop a base of allies, champions, and amplifiers. So think about your brand personality and then share the community values. If this is just about you, nobody will follow you. But also I hope that you can see that this in your brand personality, that's something that can be shared in a community with this niche audience. We call the shared community values. And both brand personality and the shared community value will help you build credibility. Mm-hmm. So your niche audience mm-hmm. and your potential fan base will connect with you, trust you, and follow you. Then you start to build a conversation. I think as technical communicators, we're good build creating content. Many of us claim ourselves are content strategists. So I think it's not so difficult for you to develop a content calendar. Think about how you're going to push content that will match the needs to your niche audience. Sometimes I'll think about putting this way that, so think about, you know, if we don't use this kind of marketing language, we're just using some other language, like, can you think about that? Can you engage yourself in a purposeful practice that has a combined power to sustain the individual, you, while also being significant to others. Mm-hmm. So when this purposeful practice then can sustain you, it has a brand personality. Mm-hmm. When it's significant to others, it has the shared community values. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think I need to say much about content strategies. That so many people who are working on content strategy in the technical communication field. Yeah.
Right. And I think that like sums up what
you can follow from
what
there.
It's all about, yeah, right? Yeah. Speaking instead of, and I like, you know, because there's some things that you mentioned in your book, and honestly, you were touching on all these questions that I had just automatically, which I knew you would, right? But
yeah.
One of the things that you talk about, which is really important that I think people need to home in on, is credibility. And you said push, but I think the message that I'm getting from you talking about it is more of you're feeding that fan base. Yeah, you're feeding that rather than pushing things out to them. You're feeding them. You're giving them the information that they need that they can connect with. Really a key point. And I love the fact that that is content strategy right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. And I think if anyone's interested in content strategy, they really need to take a look at how they feed things in social media and how they can get involved in feeding things in social media. Because that is a key cornerstone in content strategy for any company in any technology, right?
Yeah. I think one of the issues that in our technical communication industry practice, that sometimes we emphasize more about the technology side, we might want to look more at cultural side and the personal side. Of course, there's a lot of research about, you know, cultural studies of technical communication. I can give out you a lot of names there. Mm-hmm. But now in this social media age, how we can connect the technical stuff with the cultural stuff. I think social media provide a possibility and actually a very easy platform to do that.
Right. And I think that's the key thing for today's technical communicators. You can't, you're weaving a lot of information in to create your information that you're feeding to your audience and looking at things like social media, even though you're not, you might not be the social media maven at your company, but watch the social media channel for your company. Watch the people that follow it, and you can see patterns and behaviors, and you can go and research these things and take that information and then perhaps feed it to the people who are internal to the company, you know, because somebody asked a question of what are some popular pieces or attributes in technical communication that you could feed out to social media. I think this might be a good way to personalize that. And say, okay, well, let me watch my company's social media feed. Let me watch some of the people and watch the interaction and me knowing from a technical communicator's perspective, what they may be seeking, I can help possibly answer the questions, right?
Yeah.
I love getting to talk with you. I get so many ideas from so many and new avenues to look at. I truly do. Like, it's like going bing, 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 bing.
Yes. It's, and I really... unfortunately, our time is up. I'm getting the big red.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's gone by so fast. And I've really enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to get more on the playback.
You're so sweet.
I've had the fortune of talking to you a couple of times, and it's just really, it's great. And I'm so glad you came here. And I can't wait for the lily pad research. I'm so excited for that to come.
Thank you. And I just want to, thanks for having the conversation. And I also enjoyed the early conversation we had. And I told Janice that the conversation we had earlier actually helped us to work on a grant proposal. Yeah.
And you won your grant.
Got a grant. Right.
Way to go.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
You know, and it's funny, and I know I need to say this because our time is up, but that's part of why we wanted to have conversations, because we learn so much in conversations and we evolve ourselves when we engage in discourse, right?
Yes. Thanks for this opportunity. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Thanks everybody for coming.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.